In 4, 3, 2,
good evening, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you on Sunday evening, May 6, 2007. It's about 8:01 Central Time in the United States. Folks, Liberty Talk Radio is your antidote to popular talk radio. Here you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, or Stalingrad. It's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. That's during our live broadcast, and we'll be broadcasting live from now. It's about 2 minutes or 3 minutes after 8 to about 9 o'clock this evening. Otherwise, call 903-551-2186. That's 903-551-2186. 2186 and leave a voice message. Of course, you can email us anytime at comments@libertytalkradio.com. And we'll try to respond to your questions during our next broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening, it's going to be my pleasure to reintroduce Daniel Imparato, who is running for President of the United States. Now, what's interesting is we interviewed Mr. Imparato back on February 25th, I believe. But he was running as an independent. A lot has happened since then. In fact, there have been rumors that he was going to link up with Barack Obama at one point. Now, I know very little about that, and maybe that was just a rumor and it's a false rumor. I'd like to clarify that this evening. But more importantly, he is now a libertarian. Whatever happened? I mean, he went through an epiphany. So we want to find out more about that and why now he's running as a libertarian. Which obviously he would have to forego some of the positions and on the issues that he discussed with us during our last broadcast. So this should be very interesting. I asked him to call in about 5 minutes after eight, just enough time to give us to introduce the station and introduce him. And I'll be waiting for his call coming in probably in about another minute or two. While we are waiting, there was something very interesting, a million little things that were very interesting this week. It seems that I was reading an article about foreign policy, foreign aid, and we talked a little bit about that last week, about how you can now help people overseas one-on-one, person-to-person, under the radar of any government. And it's very interesting. And what this article mentioned is that foreign aid is really asymmetrical in a way, because what happens there is that the foreign governments want the foreign aid, but if things get better, they lose their foreign aid. So foreign aid actually is a disincentive. Think about it. If, in fact, the foreign aid improves the condition of affairs, then that country loses its right to the foreign aid. They get no more money. So they have an incentive to stay where they are or actually make the conditions in their country worse to keep the money flowing. Sounds like our welfare system. But I'm going to ask that question because Mr. Imparato, in fact, is a proponent of foreign aid, albeit under certain strict rules and regulations. And of course, as a libertarian, I am 100% opposed to foreign aid by the government. I'll give aid if I want to out of my own pocket. Several other things. I want to mention the Republican. I didn't get a chance to see the Democratic debate a couple of weeks ago. I did see the part of the Republican debate, and I was incredibly disappointed. Except for Ron Paul, I wouldn't bother going to the polls for any of those jokers. Not one of them. I mean, they all sounded like they were on a stump speech and were saying exactly what you wanted to hear. It was so contrived, I felt as if they were talking down to me, talking about, you know, how the righteous, they're so damn self-righteous when they spoke, it was disgusting. Giuliani was all over the place, and they all tried to make themselves look presidential instead of saying the right damn thing. And no one said the right damn thing except for Ron Paul. Ron Paul, I tell you, I'm with you all the way. There was very little to be said for any of those clowns, okay? And I say clowns because I use that word liberally these days because it's a lot better than saying something else that I'm going to get in trouble with. It is now 5 minutes after eight, and I do not have a call-in yet. I do not have a call-in from our speaker. He should be here any second now. I would like, in fact, anyone can call in at any time. If you heard the debate and you want to make a comment about it, please call 646-652-4620 and give us your opinion. And in fact, you can call that number again, 646-652-4620, while Mr. Imperato's on the air. We can actually have a three-way or four-way conversation. So I encourage people to call this evening, and I hope Mr. Imperato remembers to call. I confirmed his interview just about 4 or 5 hours ago with his press secretary, so they said he would be here. And I do have his position paper on the issues, and it's quite lengthy. I will not go over them, so I will discuss it with him when he's on the air. In the meanwhile, instead of me talking to myself in my studio and speaking into a microphone, if there's someone out there that'd like to call in and ask any question whatsoever, that would be fine because we're going to kill some time, and I do hope he remembers to call. We did have a problem in that our website indicated that we started at 8:30, and I had mentioned to his press secretary guy that we just started 8 o'clock, and I'm just wondering if that's confusing. It looks like we are late enough that he may not be calling in, and I'm really concerned about that. I see everything clicking and all that, but I don't see any phones coming through. Daniel, where are you? Okay, well, let me... Hello? Nope, there's no one there. Let me give you some of his issues, and maybe if he comes on the air, then we can discuss them. What concerns me is that if you look at his website, right now, what we have here is an overall increase in involvement of government in about every aspect of affairs. Everything from global expansion, housing, involvement in labor, of course, terrorism, religion, jobs, energy, foreign policy. He leaves very little unturned and very little untouched. And of course, as a libertarian, we don't like to touch that stuff. We want the marketplace and the people to wind up doing that stuff for themselves. And oh boy, we are going to have a problem this evening. This is not good. This is not good. Okay, well, we got to continue, and we're going to take a diversion on our broadcast and assume he's not going to call in. Here is a point on an email that I was going to save for next Thursday. And this email was, it's from Alex from Connecticut. And he says, the Democrats' plan does almost nothing to address the second largest force in Iraq. The estimated 126,000 private military contractors who will stay put there as long as Congress continues funding the war. Now, that's an excellent point, Alex. Thank you for bringing it up. You know, we never mentioned that. We only mentioned the troops coming home, but we do not mention the fact that that there are contractors out there. And mercenaries, why don't we call it the way it is, mercenaries out there that are fighting the war for us as well. And, you know, no one addresses that. No one says anything about them. No one indicates that they're going to be here. Let's see what else we have here. I do want to mention to do take a moment and go to the website of my friend Andy, www.mytwocentsonline.com. He also has a blog, a radio blog. It's blogtalkradio.com/mytwocents. And he talks mostly about economic issues, and you'll find that you'll learn a lot from Andy because he takes questions, and he's sort of like a Susie Osman show type thing where he can assist you also, you know, with your personal finance. But he's really high on the in tune with our economy and how to protect yourself. So I do encourage you to go to his website. It's very, very well written, very, very well laid out. And the articles are not so long that you can get through them, but they do host a tremendous amount of information, primarily about finance, the gold standard, you know, our economy, the money system, the Federal Reserve. And that's www.mytwocentsonline.com. And the two is a numerical two, so it's 2 cents, okay? And that's my friend Andy. Please go visit his website and his blog. And I want to mention also that we now broadcast on two platforms, not only streaming internet radio, but also on blogtalkradio.com/Liberty Talk Radio. And boy, we don't have Daniel coming in. Mm. Oh boy, we're going to have a problem this evening. I'm going to have to really punt, aren't I? Okay, what we're going to do is let's make believe he's on the air, and we'll talk to his platform. All right, here we go. I don't want to lose anything here. Let's see if everything's operating properly. Everything is operating properly. Daniel, where are you? Okay. He has under global expansion and development, he said increase. He has six points. The first one is increase trade agreements with other foreign nations and trade organizations. And I wonder what he means by that. Now, it's good to have trade agreements and open trade agreements with other nations, especially if they're fair, obviously. If they're one-sided, then, you know, we shouldn't trade one-sided. It should be a fair, free trade agreement. Unfortunately, some of these trade agreements are volumes and volumes of legal mumbo-jumbo, and I don't think anyone knows who's getting what and who's getting jabbed and who's getting shafted in the whole stupid thing. And that's a real problem. But I really wish he would clarify that. He said, utilize trade agreements to ensure basic human rights around the world. Well, you know, that's nice to say, but if we're going to trade with someone, we're going to trade with them, but we can't tell them what to do. Here we go. Liberty Talk Radio, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe, how you doing? I heard that you were supposed to have a guest this evening, and it looks like that's not going to be the case, at least for now, so I thought I'd call and give you a hand.
Oh, thank you. Who's this?
This is Andy calling from Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Oh, Andy, thank you so much. Yes, I think possibly the confusion is that when they posted his the interview on my website, they put on 8:30 instead of 8 o'clock. But I did confirm with them to call 9:05 their time or 8:05 my time. And I'm just wondering if maybe at 8:30 all of a sudden I'm going to receive a call. You know, now I can't stay on the app till after 9 o'clock. Well, first of all, I don't know if I can talk that long, but I need to pick up my wife at the airport. She's waiting for me as we no, not really. Her plane got in late. I was supposed to pick her up at 4 o'clock, and then she missed her plane, so she's going to come in around 8:45. So she's going to be waiting for me at the airport. Well, Andy, thank you for calling in. I appreciate that. I'm talking to myself right now. What I was doing is looking at some of his the issues. And what's interesting is that if you read his issues, he's not very libertarian, and yet he's running as a libertarian candidate. And I'd love to get him on the air. That's the question I want to ask him, and I want to see how he answers that. He must have gone through an epiphany, but they never changed his website.
I'd be pretty curious to hear that myself, just because usually the people that are libertarian are very, you know, very steadfast and those values. It doesn't seem like that's something you're just going to change overnight.
Yeah. Well, in fact, I received an email from one from David. His name was David. And he asked me what my position was on foreign policy. And I said, none.
Exactly.
Absolutely none. I said, why should the government be involved in foreign policy? That's my business. If I want to conduct business with someone else, I can conduct business with anyone in the world. Just because they don't happen to be in the United States shouldn't restrict my liberty and my rights to do so. And see, this is where we lose it. Now, I know that I'm not going to, you know, make nuclear bombs and sell them to terrorists. You know, I don't mean that. But, you know, we all understand what we're talking about, and yet we restrict 99.9999% of everything we do to because of a perceived threat of the 0.00001% that may never happen. And as a result, all our rights go down the toilet. And I just don't seem to understand that.
Sure. I mean, I heard you mention about the Republicans the other night, and I agree 100% with you. I heard.
Excuse me, Andy. Could you speak up just a little bit, please?
Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Hear me?
Yes, that's better. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you said about Ron Paul. I think he's probably about the only guy out there that even has a backbone. The rest of these guys, I think they put their wind out or their finger out in the wind there and see which way it's blowing, and that's their position for the week. He's if you've read his pieces and his writing. Over the years, he has never changed even one iota.
Right. No, I have not. I'll be honest with you. I have not, but recently I have. And
he's actually probably the last bit of hope that we really have in the Congress. I mean, if you take a look at the other 534, there's just not a lot there in terms of substance. There's not a lot there in terms of there's no integrity. These guys are just amazing how they just they flip-flop and they change, and they're one week they're this, the next week they're that. They want to give away goodies, and they don't want to raise taxes, and they want to print money. They're going to ruin this place.
Well, you know, most people are so confused, they don't know where they stand on the issues because they really don't understand them.
Exactly.
But once you understand the issues and you understand what the solution should be, you know, everything gets very easy, and all of a sudden you realize this is all smoke and mirrors. And what was interesting, I was channel flipping. I was really tired this afternoon. I usually don't watch any television, but I sat down and I said, I'm just going to sit there and do nothing. I'll put TV on, and maybe I'll fall asleep for 5 minutes and get a cat nap. Well, Glenn Beck was on, and when I turned it on, he was criticizing one of the participants in the Republican debate. And the person he criticized was Ron Paul. He said,
why?
The guy made no sense at all. And I didn't know what segment he was criticizing. He says, how could a man take such a position? He says, obviously, this man doesn't even belong there. And just ripped him to shreds. And I was surprised. I wanted to call the station, you know. But I didn't know what he was calling on, unfortunately.
He was probably talking about the war, because there was a couple of questions that they asked Ron Paul about the war. And he was pretty adamant, hey, you know, get our guys out of there. We have no business being over there. You know, the foreign policy is half the reason why we're in the boat we're in. I think he made the comment even, I'm not going to try and quote him because I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was something along the lines of, you know, at one point Osama bin Laden was our friend, now he's our enemy. You know, Saddam Hussein was our friend, now he's our enemy. Yeah, he basically, you know, laid out the case for our foreign policy has just totally gotten us into this huge mess. And that's probably what Glenn Beck was going after, because, you know, Glenn Beck advertises himself as a you know, an independent libertarian. But
he's no more libertarian than my cat is libertarian, you know?
Well, exactly. I think, you know, he likes the benefits, but he doesn't know how to handle the responsibility.
Right. Yeah. And he's always hawking. The few times that I've seen him, he's hawked about, you know, how we have to get serious about Islamic fascism and all that other good stuff. And I go, yeah, it's very easy. Pull out, leave them alone, let them kill themselves. All right. And we'll save a few trillion dollars and we'll still get our oil. That's how you solve the problem. I mean, do you know, I read an article just a couple of days ago, and I forgot which, it may have been Time, Newsweek, or whatever it was, and it talked about how the population of Iran was so incredibly Western. They talked about how females walk the streets, laugh and giggle and talk and go to coffee shops and have ice cream. A few years ago, they would have been tortured for doing that. In other words, they're saying what they're saying is that the government as it stands now has lost total control of the population. And the reason why they're saber-rattling with this nuclear fuel rods and all this other stuff is to inflame us so we would do something stupid so they can rally their troops behind this government that the people hate. Now, if we were smart, we'd say, fine, build whatever you want to do. Build whatever you want to. These guys would be out of office in 5 years. By the time they got the nuclear power plant going, or they can build, you know, a nuclear bomb, we would be trading with them. They'd be our friends.
Well, sure. I mean, I've made the case for a long time. I think a lot of this nonsense that goes on with nuclear weapons and WMDs and everything else. I mean, if you look at it, a lot of these machinations and saber rattling that goes on, I think, is to protect the dollar. And when you really look at it, I mean, as long as we can force these countries to trade dollars for oil, you know, or dollars for anything else, you know, we've got the hegemony going. As soon as that becomes not the case anymore, you know, the United States loses all of its power because, really, I mean, when you think about it, we're nothing more than a paper tiger.
Oh, absolutely.
In economics, at some point. I think a lot of this is nothing more than we're protecting the greenback.
Well, you know, we have all sorts of reasons, excuses why we went to Iraq. You know, there are just as many reasons to go to probably 50 other countries, you know, in the world that we're supposed to invade for literally the same level of reason that we went to Iraq, but yet we choose Iraq. And isn't it strange? That's where we have all our bases. You know, this is where all the oil is. You know, we're not in any place in sub-Sahara Africa, you know, you know, because we don't want to protect the diamond mines there. We don't care about the diamond mines there.
Not enough money goes through there. I mean, you look at Liberia and all the ethnic cleansing that's gone on there under Charles Taylor. And nobody could have cared less about that.
Right, right.
You know, these guys don't care about humanitarianism. They care about dollars.
Yeah.
Dollars and control of, you know, vital resources. That's all it's all about, and that's all it's ever been about.
Yeah. I gave a speech about 2 or 3 weeks ago to a group here in Tulsa, talked about the war in Iraq from a libertarian perspective, and I gave a sheet of paper out to everyone in the audience, and I said, would you please write down why you think we're in Iraq? 8 words or less. I wanted to make it really short, and I went around the room real quickly. Do you know, basically, everyone said everything from to, you know, avenge, you know, George Bush Sr., all this other stuff, you know? And at the end, and I was really surprised, I asked some people to just hand them in, and about eight people gave me their responses because I wanted to keep them. And a couple of people came up to me and said, well, no, we have to be there. I said, why? They said, because of the oil. I said, it's important. Our nation runs on oil, and we can't take that risk. I said, well, and by the way, this was not a bunch of stupid people I was talking to. These were very well-educated people, which really surprised me. And they were, none of them agreed with the next guy next to them. I mean, they all had a different reason for it, you know. And what was interesting is I said, well, in that case, Iraq should be able to come here and occupy the Northwest because they need our wood. And they said, no, of course not. And they could not connect the dots, Andy.
Oh, I know what you're saying.
I said, well, why not? I mean, if they need the wood, desperate, they don't have wood there. They need wood for building. That's why they don't have houses the way we have houses. They have these, you know, mud huts and, you know, concrete block houses. They need our wood. So they should come in, occupy the United States militarily, and section off the whole Northwest, right, and have all their military protect it, and then ship the wood, you know, to Iraq. And they looked at me like I was nuts. I said, but that's what we're doing. But they said, but that's okay because we need the oil. They couldn't. I mean, this is, I'm talking about people with master's degrees could not connect the dots, and it drove me nuts.
Well, no, they can't because, you know, everybody looks through the looking glass as we're doing it. Well, yeah, it's okay if we do it, but nobody else is allowed to. You know, there's other countries, like you said, other countries that you know, they need things too. And you don't see other countries occupying people militarily. You know, and it annoys me because if you talk to a Glenn Beck or any of these mainstream radio guys, and you try and say something like that, the first thing they throw out of your mouth at you is, you know, you're being unpatriotic, you hate the country, you must be a liberal. You know, and it's just, you realize how compartmentalized thinking has become. And then it's really not much of a stretch of the imagination to figure out why people don't understand how they're being manipulated, you know, in terms of money and, you know, and things like that. I mean, everything is so compartmentalized.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, I read an article that the number of military bases that we have around the world numbers 776. I couldn't believe that. Now, I'm sure someone didn't make up that number, and I wish I could verify it. And we have, you know, airfields with jet fighters and stuff like that on, and in over 50, but we can't confirm that because a lot of them are stealth, you know. But right. 50 or 60 or 70, there's only 192 nations in the world, if you include, I think the Vatican makes 193. And we have someone's troops stationed in over 150. I mean, if that doesn't make you a world empire and imposing yourself on about everyone, we've got to go financially bankrupt after a while.
No. If you look at, I saw a statistic that just blew me away this past week. You know, like you were saying before, I mean, I focus mostly on the economic perspectives of this. But every year, David Walker, or whoever the comptroller of the currency, or the comptroller of the United States happens to be, releases a report of the Treasury. They basically use GAAP, which is Generally Accepted Accounting Practices.
Right.
It's basically the way you and I have to do it in our business.
Right.
Now, not the way the U.S. government likes to do their accounting manipulation. You know what the deficit was for 2006?
No. I mean, not the one that you're going to tell me. I wouldn't know.
The budget deficit, the actual operating deficit of the U.S. government in 2006, 1 year, $4.6 trillion.
Oh, so but what was the published deficit?
It was $300 billion. It was like 1/20th of it.
Well, what made up the rest?
The rest was all the unfunded liabilities that the government likes to throw off of the balance sheet.
Okay, okay.
Talking about Social Security, Medicare, this prescription drug plan, a lot of the Iraq stuff. You know, not to pick at Iraq again, but a lot of the Iraq stuff is off balance sheet.
I understand that. That's right. I had read that the cost for the Iraq war is not on the balance sheet. It's an off the balance sheet item. I wish I could do that.
Yeah, it's a non budget item. Wouldn't that be nice to be able to do that? You and I, if we did that stuff in our own companies, we'd be doing this broadcast from Sing Sing.
I have to count my pens and pencils in the office to make sure I get all my inventory so I can pay my franchise tax to the state. It's insane.
Exactly.
You know, what's interesting is Daniel and Prada. We're going to know probably in around 6 minutes whether or not he's going to call, because I'm assuming that they've confused, or I've confused them with the 8 and 8:30. In fact, I just called. In fact, my son is the one that does my website for him. I said, Mark, I said, you know, we go on at 8 o'clock. He said, "You've been going on 8:30." I said, "You got to watch my blog and check the schedule, you know." And Daniel Imperato has under the defense issues, build American military to be the most powerful military in the world. And when I read that, I said, "Well, where has he been? Who's more powerful than us?"
Well, I mean, I think, you know, soon you'll be able to make the case for the Chinese military.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, anyway.
We got the bodies.
Yeah, that's true, right. Right. And it says, make the most sophisticated technology available to it for our military. Hell no, I don't want to do that. They give it away.
Yeah.
We want to keep that stuff on the lock and key. And it says, enhance manufacturing facilities to be able to supply the military with the latest equipment on a timely basis. Well, sure. I would alter my plant if it was economical, if they gave me an order that would justify it, but I'm not going to change my plant for military purposes and lose money on the deal, nor do I want to hand out for the government so that when they stop buying, I get stuck with this albatross and I can't afford to keep it.
Yeah, I got an even better idea. Instead of doing that, why don't we build some productive capacity here and actually make some things that we can use in this country instead of importing everything from Asia?
Unique. Very unique. You know, on the minimum wage issue, they, you know, he talks about jobs. He wants to promote job programs. Well, he sounds like FDR in a way, and I'm really interested to get him. I want him to clarify this for me because these are not libertarian issues, and he wants to start education programs for business teaching, and I don't understand what that is. In energy, he also has the government heavily involved. He says implementation of a long-range plan of energy consumption reduction goals, as well as fostering solar and wind-propelled power plants when environmental conditions permit and when it is cost effective. I said the answer is yes. You know, sure, if it's cost effective and economical and we can make some money on the deal, that's fine. You know, I mean, people would be building it. Hell, I'd invest in it, but I'm not going to invest in a wind farm now if it's not making any money, so people are not going to build it. In fact, the biggest wind farm in the United States, I think, is owned by Shell Oil Company, Royal Dutch Shell.
I believe you're right about that.
Yeah, but
Everybody's going to, you know, energy is going to be a hot button issue for this presidential election. Everybody that you're going to hear from is going to have a plan that says, you know, reduce energy consumption, become energy independent. What you have to do is you have to get down to the nitty gritty. All right, that's great. How are you going to do it?
Right.
You know, if you're talking about reducing energy consumption, or who are you going to tell you can't buy gas? Who are you going to tell you can't heat your home? Or do you have another way of doing it? You really have to hammer them on the details because, you know, it seems to me, and I heard a little bit about this boilerplate stuff the other night. A lot of these guys, you know, I mean, McCain and some of the others, and I don't mean to pick on him necessarily, but he's one of the more higher-profile guys there. You know, a lot of these guys, they seem to have talking points, but not a lot of details. I want details.
Right.
I want to know how you're going to do it. I want to know how it's going to affect me. I want to know how it's going to affect the economy. I want to know how, you know, this is going to be useful going forward. If this is going to be another ethanol deal, I'm not totally sure that I could back somebody.
You know, I'm sure I'm going to get some nasty email. I think ethanol is dumb. I mean, why should we rape our farmland to make fuel that we can get cheaper someplace else?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, that makes no sense to us, and it's got to be government subsidized, and the processing involved is worse than distilling gasoline. I don't understand that at all.
Well, and the thing with ethanol is it's really not, you don't really get a lot of energy gain out of it. In other words, what you have to put in to make it is almost as much as what you get out of it.
Right.
You're really not accomplishing much other than driving the price of corn up. You know, because you're going to have to be, you're either going to make food or fuel. You know, and if all these farmers are planting acres of corn instead of acres of wheat or soybean or whatever else, you know, all that's going to do is drive the food complex up.
And it already, by the way, it already has. So we, in fact, are subsidizing the ethanol program through higher food prices. And
yeah,
people don't realize that. We are actually subsidizing. We think oil is relatively low, although we complain about it, it's still relatively low. But what we are paying in taxes to support the military and what we pay in inflation to support the stuff, you know, that we continue to spend when we shouldn't, when money that we don't have, and the erosion of the dollar, that actually is going for the military. And so we are paying the hidden tax, the hidden cost of gasoline is through our tax system. But it's transparent to us. We just think it's taxes.
Well, a lot of people are duped into this whole thing with the gasoline situation is all supply and demand, and that's certainly a component of it. But you have an inflation component there as well. There's an inflation premium, you know, because oil and oil products are traded on a global scale. And that is one of the areas where dollar inflation is felt.
Right.
You know, so the price of oil being, what, $62 a barrel? is certainly a component of supply and demand, but it's certainly probably, you know, I would venture to say that it's at least equally being impacted by just the amount of inflation and the erosion of the value of the dollar
right.
over the past several years.
Yeah.
If you go to a stockcharts.com or any of those places where you can get decent charts, and you run up a chart of the U.S. dollar index, and you run up a chart of the price of oil, I mean, they're almost going in totally opposite directions,
yeah.
and it makes total sense.
Yeah.
Well, the dollar is getting cheaper, it's buying less, so you got to use more of it.
Right. Well, what's interesting is that we don't have an energy crisis. We have a consumption crisis.
Sure.
There was a fellow who, and I don't know who the person was. I didn't get his title and whatever, but apparently he was an energy expert, but independent. He wasn't a government bureaucrat. And he said, if we wanted to reduce the price of a gallon of gasoline from 50 cents to $1, we can do that tomorrow. All we would have to do is make 4 less trips per 100. In other words, 4%. Drive 4% less, and it would go down up to $1 a gallon. Now, I'll be honest with you, that's easy for me to do. I mean, first of all, I drive very, very little anyway. And, you know, I'm not a big consumer of gasoline anyway. So, but even the little that I do, hell, I can cut that out. And anyone can. How many times you see people get in their SUVs? In fact, I saw one guy walk out of a store, get in his SUV, repark the car next to the store just a few feet down the parking lot, and repark his SUV so he could park there and walk into the next store. You know, I mean, it's ludicrous. It's ridiculous.
Hey, get out and walk. Jeez,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was probably Matt Simmons that you heard say that, because I think I heard something.
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
From Matt not too long ago. But yeah, I mean, you know, we've got tight margins, you know, on supply there, and you know, we're certain our habits are not making this any better.
Yeah,
is there some gouging going on? Hey, that's certainly possible.
Yeah,
in fact, you know, in a lot of situations, I think it's probably likely. You know, you have a multifaceted issue, you know, with gas prices, and it's a very political issue. I mean, you saw what happened last fall before the midterm elections, where you had Goldman Sachs tweaking their commodity index, and they managed to drive the petroleum complex down quite a bit there in the fall. And you know, gas is very political. People know what a tank of gas costs. People know what a gallon of gas.
Yeah, there's a private school about a mile from my house, and every once in a while I get stuck in the traffic there. And one time I looked at the cars coming out, and I mean every single car, not most. Everyone was a large size SUV picking up their little darling children. You know, and I often think, I say, you know, if we took somebody from let's assume for a second we came from outer space, we came from another planet, and we landed here, right? And somehow we understood each other, though. And one of the questions we probably ask is, what are those transports called? We'd say they call them cars. They go, well, geez, that's interesting. There's only one person in each transport. How come there are not more people? Well, they say, you know, we'll give them an answer on that. And they go, well, that's interesting. How much does a person weigh here on planet Earth? And we say, well, probably the average person driving an SUV is somewhere between 180 and 200 pounds, considered women, men, and whatever. And they say, good. How much does an SUV weigh? About 5,000 pounds. Or a small one would be over 4,000 pounds. So the question would be, if we were from outer space, we would say, do you mean you construct something that weighs 4,000 to 5,000 pounds to transport, you know, an earthling that weighs 180 to 200 pounds? Now, if you just think of that, think the insanity of it. I mean, really, I mean, we don't think that way. We think, well, you know, we need a big car, so we want to be able to protect ourselves on the highway, you know. But when you think about, someone goes out and buys a 5,000 pound, and most of them are women that I see driving them, by the way. So you have a 5,000 pound automobile that costs anywhere from $30,000 to $50,000, right? Weighs 5,000 pounds. She weighs 126 pounds, and she drives around in it. And then we complain that the price of gasoline's too high. I'm the one that's going nuts, Andy. I'll be honest with you. It drives me absolutely nuts to think that way.
You and I both. I wrote a piece on it this week, and the feedback that I've gotten has just been completely amazing. You know, and it's always funny when you turn on the news, and they do a piece on gas, and they go to the, you know, they go to the high price pump, and they start interviewing people. Who are the ones they're always interviewing? The guys next to the huge Hummers, the excursions, the expeditions. You know, and these people are sitting there, and they're complaining about the price of gas, and they're driving this monstrosity. You know, I don't have any problem with people having a big vehicle. That's your choice. If you want to own that big vehicle, then own the big vehicle. I really don't care. But don't sit there then and complain about how much it costs to drive it.
Yeah, then they say, well, the government should have new standards. Well, why should the government have new standards? We don't want the standards. We want big cars. We don't care how much gas it takes. It's up. It's really comical. I mean, the whole thing is comical. You know, soon the, I think next year, the Chinese are going to be importing cars into the United States.
Yep.
And I heard that one of them is going to be like $4,500 or something like that. And, you know, I'm going to buy one just for spite. I'm going to buy one, you know, and I'll bet you the thing gets 50 miles to the gallon, you know. But it's going to be very interesting to see how General Motors responds to that, because right now they haven't done a very good job at all of responding to any competition out there.
You're assuming General Motors is still going to be solvent at that point.
That's right. You know, it doesn't really have much longer to go. I heard an auto industry analyst say that General Motors right now is selling cars at their regular price, not on special terms, but they actually sell certain cars at a loss. They actually lose every money on every car built on certain models. That's how bad it's gotten. And the amount the amount of health care cost that it's in each car, and I forgot the number, but it was something like $1,600 per car, and for the Japanese companies, it's $300.
Oh my God, General Motors, they have so many, they haven't made money on selling vehicles, and I'm not sure of the exact stats, but I don't believe that they've made money selling vehicles in this decade. It's GMAC, the financing group, that's been making their money. And I just read a piece last week that GMAC's profit was down 90% or something like that.
Yes, I saw that article, yeah.
Yeah, because they got creamed there in the subprime mortgage market.
Right.
Second, you guys are selling cars. Now you're going to play real estate too, and they just got shellacked. So their profit got crushed in the first quarter. And you know what? That's another whole thing.
Right. Well, it's
and that's only getting started. You know, if GMAC is playing around in subprime mortgages, I mean, they might be under before the end of the year.
You know, I didn't know they were doing that. That really surprised me when I read that.
Yeah, it surprised me too, because I figured they would stick to their bread and butter, which was the cars, but they're just not selling them. Ford's not selling them, but the sales of the Expeditions and the Excursions are up double-digit percentages, you know, in the first quarter of the year, which totally blew my mind.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen these gas prices going up, and things are getting out of hand with patents. You know, they're selling more cars. That's just unbelievable.
Well, you know, people say, well, Joe, what do you do when, you know, prices go up? I say, I buy more stock in oil.
Yeah,
you buy
really.
More stock in oil. That's what you do. People smoke more. You buy cigarette stock. You know, you don't have to be a Harvard business graduate to know you buy stock in stuff that people buy and prices are going up while prices are going up.
Yeah, I look at it from an investment perspective. I look at it this way. You've got Venezuela, Russia, China, India. All of these places are looking to lock in long-term supply contracts for petroleum products.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's, you just buy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You just grab as much as you can because, you know, you're talking about something scarce. Where else can, and this is, they made this point on the Financial Sense over the weekend, where else can you say, all right, every single item, every single input, you know, unit that I produce, I'm going to just be able to sell it, and I'm never going to have a problem selling
right
it.
and then the average American consumer wants the government to put a cap on the on what the oil companies can charge, and they're going to really exasperate the situation, because all the oil companies have to do is say, fine, we won't produce it anymore, we won't sell it. You know?
Hey, anybody who wants to know how price controls work just needs to go back to 1973.
That's right. What was really interesting is I worked for Royal Dutch Shell during that point in time, and I was in international marine sales. And actually, I had the job of allocating fuel in throughout the United States, all the ships, foreign and domestic. And I can tell you more stories about that. I was offered, I mean, megabucks to just to bunker some ships that were out in general anchorage, out of fuel, and millions of dollars was rotting on those ships. And they would come to me and say, "Mr. Cristiano, I represent the so-and-so. If we can just have lunch, we should make it worthwhile for you. We do need, you know, 10,000 barrels of number two, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, intermediate fuel oil, 2,000. And I mean, I could have made, and I didn't, I never went and never took a dime. I could have made millions. No, hundreds of I could have made over $100,000 over lunch. You know, I could have retired in a week. And I used to tell my boss about it. He used to get really nervous. He says, "I know you're not." I said, "No, I'm not taking anything." You know, I said, "If I was, would I be telling you about it?" You know, you know, I'd keep my mouth shut. But it was a real mess. And what was interesting is we had during the allocations of fuel, we had a U.S. destroyer ship, a Navy ship, come into the port of Houston, and they needed fuel, but they weren't on the allocated list. And the plant manager called me, and he said, "They want fuel." And I, you know, I had to give him the stand. I said, "They have no allocation." And he said, "The guns are facing the refinery."
Yeah,
I mean, we were joking. We were going to supply them, obviously, you know. But I said, "I'm sorry, I can't authorize that." He said, "The guns are facing the refinery." I said, "Well, then give it to him. What the heck, you know?" But it just got it that the whole thing was totally out of hand.
Yeah, this whole thing with you know, price controls, and you're hearing clamoring about that, and saber rattling about a windfall profit tax, and all of that sort of thing. And you know as well as I do that these companies, I mean, you might be able to stick them with a very small piece of that windfall profit tax. But those things generally find their way into the lap of the consumer.
Right.
Those taxes, because you know, these guys, you know, they got an obligation to stockholders, and they got to keep the stockholders happy, and you know, that's a legal fiduciary responsibility of a public corporation, is to increase shareholder value. You know, so they can't just say, "Oh, okay, we're going to eat $20 billion in taxes." You know, they've got to try to find a way to replace that, and usually the way they do it, you know, is through the end consumer. And unfortunately, you know, it follows the old analogy, it rolls downhill.
That's right. You know, even corporate taxes, I think Reagan said this one time, and one of the things that I agreed with him on that point, at least, he said corporations don't pay taxes.
No, they don't.
I mean, they collect them from the consumer. You know, they collect them. They pay them, but then they collect them from the consumer again. Corporations don't pay taxes. They just pass the cost along to the consumer. You can tax a corporation. You can tax any corporation, quadruple their tax, 10 times the amount. All we wind up doing is pay more money for the product.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you take any startup corporation that begins operations on day one, you know, and they have X number of dollars. The only way they're going to produce any money to tax is by, you know, getting activity going with consumers. You know, all they are is a pass-through entity as far as taxes are concerned. You're like,
that's right.
They're the collectors. You know, the consumers are the payers. You know, the corporation doesn't make money out of its own existence unless it does business with consumers.
Right, and the buck stops with us. I mean, if we don't have the money, then we just stop buying, you know? It's the same with inflation. You know, people think that inflation comes from higher prices. They don't realize it comes from increased money supply. You just increase something, and it becomes less valuable.
Well, sure. You know, that is one of the that's probably one of the most misunderstood terms in the English language, is the word inflation.
Right.
What it means, and really how it translates down to, you know, the Main Street. And there's this constant game of misinformation that goes on to keep people from understanding really what it is. Because guess what? As soon as people understand what it is, they're going to realize where it comes from. And there's only one place it comes from, and that's you know, either through, you know, the Treasury, you know, the Federal Reserve, or however they decide to print this week's batch, you know, whether they do it through the, you know, through the credit system or through the bank system or whatever. But that's the only place where you can have inflation.
Yeah.
Where you can have higher prices. That's a result.
That's right. The higher prices are the result. Right. Well, it's incredible how ignorant very well-educated people are as to how things work and what is going on. I mean, I run into this on a daily basis. And I'll be honest with you, I find it depressing because it's so difficult to have a conversation because people bring in their belief systems, you know, things that they grew up with, you know, saying, no, this is wrong. We shouldn't do this. We should do that. And there's no substance behind it. And it's very difficult to have a conversation.
Yeah, you take politics especially. You know, you get a lot of that. And that's, you know, you run into this in other areas too. You know, you talk about, here's an example for you, saving. You know, personal saving. You know, the old school style of savings is you pay all your bills and then whatever's left over, you save it, right? That's how we were all taught.
Right.
You know, I always try and tell people, no, you're putting the cart before the horse. What you need to do is when you get your money, you pay yourself first.
Right.
You do your saving first, and then, darn it, you make your lifestyle fit whatever's left.
Right. I say it another way. I say I invest first, eat second.
Exactly. You know, if you don't have enough money to buy the, you know, the big screen TV at the end of the month, well, guess what? Then don't buy the big screen.
That's right. You know, we Americans are so spoiled. It's incredible what we hold dear and important and what we feel is our right are the nonsense things that we buy, you know? And people feel that, well, you know, if they don't update their kitchen cabinets every 10 years, life is not worth living. I mean, it's amazing where we put our priorities and how important these things are and the amount of money we spend on them. And then on those things that are important, they don't give a lick to.
Well, sure. You know, and if you've got, you know, and certainly some people are in a position where they can make their savings and then they can still buy these, you know, kitchen cabinets or SUVs or whatever. That's fine. That's fine, but you pay yourself first, and people just have a really, really hard time understanding that. And most people are looking at it the other way. You know, I'm gonna have all my fun and I'm gonna do all this kind of thing first, and then if there's anything left, then I'll save it. You know, and unfortunately, you know, if you look at the balance sheet of most households, you see that we have a negative savings rate. So, you know, at the end of the day, there's a negative amount left. You know, we've got balance sitting on MasterCard somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, we're not saving anything.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine who recently, unfortunately, passed away. Terrible brain cancer, you know, the whole bit is terrible. But she got real problems with her business. And she told me one time that she was paying over $700 a month in interest on her credit cards.
Incredible.
Now, do the math on that and you know, extrapolate it and find out what the balance. So that's what I did. And I couldn't believe. I said, you can't possibly owe that much on credit cards, you know.
Yeah,
and she was a wonderful person, by the way. And she just, you know, and she used a credit card to try to bail herself out. And she, till the day she died, she was strapped with making those payments, and she struggled every day because of that.
Yeah, that's
unfortunately
incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
$8,000 a year in credit card interest.
Yeah, yeah. People say, Joe, you know, you got money. Why don't you do this? Well, because I have more money than brains. That's why I don't do anything. You know, I don't want to spend my money on stuff that I don't want to need. And it's I've never done that before, and I've always looked at, you know, what the cost versus benefit. I got a lot of crap, and I'll be honest with you, like most Americans, as George Carlin would say, you know, we all got a lot of stuff that we all protect, and I got a lot of stuff too, and it's mine. Don't you dare touch it, you know. I never use it. I'll probably throw it away, but don't you dare touch it, you know. It's mine. And we have too much stuff. We really do, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, Andy, we have about 5 minutes remaining on the clock, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to probably sign off a couple of minutes early. I got to pick up my wife at the airport. She's actually sitting there now waiting for me, so I'm going to see if I can sign off just a couple of minutes early and then just sign off the radio station and I have no idea what we're going to do on I have a Thursday morning broadcast at Thursday morning at 6:30 a.m. I think maybe I'll just continue the conversation that we're having now and talk a little bit about money supply, the way we're – maybe the energy crisis. That's what I'll talk about. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Okay? And, Andy, calling in, I owe you a big one, guy.
Hey, no problem. I just I kind of – had a sneaking suspicion that maybe things weren't going to work out for you, and I thought I'd give you a shout.
Well, your suspicions were right, and I'm surprised because I've had him on the air before. Maybe he heard me say things like, I wonder where his epiphany came from. Why? And maybe that scared him away or something like that. But I'm going to call his campaign manager and find out where he was. Now, maybe because he was coming in from out of town. Now, maybe his plane was delayed, and if that's the case, I'll have him on next Sunday.
Well, I'll certainly be interested to hear what he has to say, and I'll let you go. I'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Okay, very good, Andy. Thank you so much. I appreciate it sincerely. Take care.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Right, bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Andy from MyTwoCentsOnline.com. Just a super fella, and I really encourage you to go to his website, www.mytwo, and the two is a numerical two, MyTwoCentsOnline.com. He also has a blog radio broadcast. It's blogtalkradio.com/mytwocents. We're going to wrap up today's broadcast. Thursday morning is our next broadcast, 6:30 a.m. in the morning. All right. And then I'm going to call Daniel Imperato's office to find out why he did not show tonight. And I know he was coming in from out of town. His plane may have been delayed. I know because I have to pick up my wife at the airport. She was supposed to be in at 4 o'clock, actually 3:45, and she wound up landing, hopefully, at about 8:45, and I can hear the thunder outside the studio right now. The weather's getting very bad, so I'm sure there's been a lot of delays in air flight. All right, so with that, we're going to play our bumper song. Here we go. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com, or phone in your questions to area code 903-551-2186. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Until next time, stay well, stay tuned.